The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Here we go. Welcome back to Game 4 Wins. I am Tony Curry. Right below me, Kip Kiefer, my partner in crime when it comes to television, radio, and everything terrestrial. We got it going on right here. He, of course, executive director of Birmingham Racecourse Casino. We have a big night coming out at the BJCC, or not the BJCC, but the Birmingham Racecourse. If, in fact, you're in town and you're listening to the show, make sure you get after it. We're going to have a large time at 5 o'clock. Plus, some details on that. Kai Gregory has done it all when it comes to handicapping. He's the bottom left-hand corner. Case Kiefer, executive director and chief editor of the Las Vegas Sun. I say the executive director because it just sounds really, really important. I don't know if you're actually the executive director of that magazine, but I figured you probably would like the idea that I'm actually propping you up and giving you a raise promotional-wise. So, good morning, gentlemen. What a busy week we got. Great game last night. It wasn't quite the nail-biter, I think, a lot of us thought, because they got a 14 late. We'll talk about that. We got NFL action to get into, quarterback changes, and we got a crap ton of great college football games to get into. We'll always start with our guy down in the bottom left-hand corner. I definitely want to start with Kai because he's got some great news about what happened on our little platform last weekend. Go, baby.
Hey, I mean, you can't make this shit up. You go to the website, you can look at Saturday, 19-3. I was sitting there when I'm posting games, all I going, these are way too many games. I know Case plays every game on the board, but way too many games for us to give out. Gave out 22 games. We go 19-3, including our biggest play that we put out as a triple play. We've hit that three straight Saturdays. We put out a double play and hit that. The triple play was the team total with Tennessee in the first half. The double play was Florida State with the team total in the first half that went over in the first quarter versus that powerhouse Kent State. 28-9 last week. College football year to date, we are 42-11.
That's not bad.
79%, I'm sorry, not quite 80%, 79%. Saturday, 19-3, 86%. Year-to-date, 804, 427, and 15. So I don't know what people are waiting on. Get on board.
Yeah, we'll try to get by the 80% this week. Sorry about that, Kai. We need to.
Yeah, came up about two-thirds of a point short.
I'm pretty sure it was my picks, like the Utah play that some people on here said they didn't like. Last week, I'm pretty sure that is what kept us from 80%, so I apologize.
That is no problem, my friend. We'll hold you against it this coming weekend. I'm sure they'll bounce back. Let's go to Case. Let's talk about what games the public is all over. And I realize that a lot of public money doesn't come into the last minute, but I'm just looking at one. First of all, Notre Dame, Arkansas. I would just assume that everyone in the world is on Notre Dame. Let's start there. The Fighting Irish, 1-2 on the season, going to Pittman land and only giving up 5.5. Where is the public money on the college football board?
You said it. I know it's boring, but I think most of it's not going to come for a few days. And I think on that game specifically, it just seems like it's been an avalanche of Arkansas money here mm-hmm. early. The first number I saw was 7.5. I've talked about this a few times on the show, but when I'm betting the openers, I only really fire for something I love. That was one of the ones where I put Arkansas +7.5? Just because numbers wise, I couldn't get that high. By the time I circled back to it, it was 6, and I was like, I thought it was going to keep going because I was pretty surprised. The way I do things, if you look at any data, any analytics, it's going to scream that Arkansas is the play here. I even wrote about this today in the Sun, and it's one of the big games I broke down. If you want to check it out, LasVegasSun.com. But I said this is like the ultimate numbers versus intuition game to me, because intuitively I feel like Notre Dame, I guess I'm with the public. I feel like Notre Dame just has a higher caliber roster. They should win, but numbers wise, there's just no way you could get the line this high. So I did end up firing a little bit on Arkansas +6. What pushed me over the top when I was trying to decide if I wanted to take number one, I knew it was going to go down. It just seemed like there was so much interest in Arkansas. But Notre Dame's pretty beaten up too. I think they've got two guys in their starting secondary, including forget the cornerback who's going to be an NFL draft, possible first round NFL draft picks hurt. It looks like Arkansas is a little bit fresher, and I just feel like even if Notre Dame goes up big, I mean this Arkansas offense has been even better than I expected, and I had pretty high expectations. I feel like they're always going to have the back door possibility. I wouldn't be surprised if you're right, and by the time we get to Saturday, that Notre Dame's taking some money. But right now, it's been all Arkansas. I mean, the other big games, I think I'm probably not shocking anyone by saying I think Georgia and Oregon are both going to be public sides. I've already heard a bunch of people express shock that how's Georgia only a field goal favorite. Another one where I think the numbers tell a different story than just what you think off the top of your head. So I think Georgia will get a lot of interest, and then everyone hates Penn State every year. I kind of agree. This line seems a little bit high, but I think Oregon will be a really popular underdog by Saturday.
Kip, you nailed it a couple of weeks ago, this Georgia-Alabama game. And, of course, if you're Bama fans, we can't believe the line is even three. Now, of course, the public's looking at going, I can't believe Georgia's only given up three. What's your thoughts?
Well, I mean, I maybe, and you guys can, and I always have to choose my words carefully here, but you guys know that by we doing this show every week, how much emphasis I put on where the games are being played. And I think a lot of times we don't put enough emphasis on that. Alabama, as far as what they've done on the field, I don't think it justifies them being this tight of a dog in this game. Georgia has won 33 games in a row at home. They have not lost since 2018. Kirby Smart has not had Alabama in Sanford Stadium in his tenure. The last time he was hit there, he was the defensive coordinator against Alabama, or in an Alabama-Georgia game. He was defensive coordinator for Alabama in the infamous blackout game where Alabama beat Georgia upside down and sideways, but this is a different era. Kalen DeBoer's teams have not performed well on the road. I look at this line, and Georgia only being a field goal at home to me is surprising. I don't know what that's based on. Alabama's potential. They got clobbered at Tallahassee. They come home and beat Louisiana Monroe 73-0 and just a joke of a game. And then Wisconsin, that big win that a lot of Alabama fans really seem to be buoyed by, a quality Big Ten team. They go home last week and lose to Maryland in Camp Randall, which completely took the stock away from the Alabama win over Wisconsin. So I don't understand the line. I think Georgia has a huge edge in this game. And I think Georgia has with their coach being the source of it, has a huge chip on their shoulder, because Kirby Smart is throwing up every morning in his bathroom at 4 o'clock before he starts working on the game plan of this Alabama owns Georgia BS.
Mm-hmm. Kai, please tell me. Please, you got something you want to say? Go.
And this is hard for me that I'm going to go defend the legends, Kevin DeBoer. But to say that Alabama, that DeBoer's team does not perform on the road, I think is bullcrap. You got one year last year they didn't perform well. But every other year, I mean, the guy's record's, 90% winning? So clearly he's won on the road.
Not at Alabama.
On the road. It's just one year at Alabama they didn't perform great on the road.
Go ahead.
I know this is really hard for people. I think part of the reason why I at three, I wouldn't bet it. At 3.5, I think it's a bet on Alabama. I know this is going to be controversial, but I think this is why people lose money betting sports. You react way too much to the results. You want to get granular and look down. I don't think Georgia's performance at Tennessee was really any better than Alabama's at Florida State. And I know you're going to go, what? That's crazy. Alabama lost by 2 touchdowns. Georgia won. I mean, this line's probably under 3 if the Tennessee kid just makes a field goal at the end of the day. Tennessee outgained Georgia by like 2 yards per play. I did not think that was a good performance from Georgia. Offensively, they looked good. Defensively, there were some real holes. And yeah, I mean, Alabama beat up on some poor teams in Wisconsin and UL Monroe, but Georgia played some really crappy teams too and didn't perform near as well. So I just think, and I get it. You know, I think Kip nailed my biggest concern is being at home. I mean, it's obviously a tough place to win. No one's won there in what, 7 years?
7 years. Yeah.
But I just, you know, if you get down into the data, it says these teams are a lot closer than I think public perception. And it's all because of one missed field goal. I feel like this game, everyone would be, say it's a total toss up if the Tennessee kid just didn't shake a field goal at the end of the game. That's a pretty wild swing.
Well, let me ask you guys this question.
You're really hurting my heart. Stop talking about the Tennessee kid missing the damn field goal.
Well, let me ask you this question. If that was Alabama at Tennessee, couple of weeks ago, what would the result of that game be? I think Georgia getting out of there with a win when they got absolutely bushwhacked at the start of that game. I don't think there's another team in the SEC that would have won in Neyland Stadium that day. And Georgia still found a way to get out of there with a W. So I'm actually impressed they survived that, because Tennessee was loaded for bear and came out and just hit them with a blitzkrieg. You get down 21-7 in that atmosphere, and for them to persevere and come back and take control of the game, Tennessee got back in with a kind of a wing and a prayer play that their receiver outfought the Georgia guy. Anyway, there was just a lot of ups and downs in that game. But, you know, for Georgia to go into that atmosphere in their first road game, their first SEC game, and get out of there with a win, I don't think they're getting enough credit for doing that.
I totally agree with you. And how many times do we see the script where a team comes out, they're fired up, they're all over the place, the next thing you know, people are texting each other, this is going to be a blowout. Oh, look at this. They're up by 14. Oh, my gosh. I'm turning it off. It's a 60-minute game, guys. You know what I mean? We just got to wait and see what happens. And the Kirby Smarts, the Nick Sabans of the world realize it's a 60-minute game, too. So just hold off to the end. Please tell me, Kai, that you're not licking your chops if that Tennessee line can get down to 6.5 or 7 on the road at the Bulldogs. I know they're undefeated, but 7.5, that looks like a public game to me. And that looks like, what are we doing here? Why are the Tennessee Volunteers favored by more?
I'm going to tell you what. Tennessee's defense has not traveled under Josh Heupel since he's been at Tennessee. There is zero chance I would lay 7.5. I would bet the over. I would bet Tennessee team total over. I would bet Mississippi State team total over. But there's zero chance I would lay 7.5. I wouldn't lay 6.5 with Tennessee. Their defense has not traveled since day one under Heupel.
This is one I didn't hesitate with. I loved Mississippi State +9.5. I fired right away. I made it right about 7. Now, granted, I've been pretty anti-Tennessee this year, although I did bet them in the Georgia game, and it worked out. And I've been super high on Mississippi State. I think I've bet them every single week. I don't know. I mean, I know they were terrible last year, but they had a lot in place to kind of transcend this year. And you haven't seen any evidence that they haven't. I think them being more than a touchdown underdog at home, I think there's a good chance you get that 6.5. I at least think this closes 7. I don't think anyone that's looking a little bit closer can say that as well as Mississippi State had played, they should be more than a touchdown dog at home, in my opinion.
You guys mentioned Oregon, Penn State. It's 3.5. Finally, we're going to find out who's the best between these two. Throw out Ohio State because everyone keeps talking about it. I haven't played anybody, but it's still the best team in the Big Ten. But I'll start with my Big Ten extraordinaire, Kip Kiefer. This across the land, man. You know I'm always going to start with you because I know how much you love the Big Ten. This game is going to be a lot of fun, regardless of whether you hate the Big Ten or not. It should be a lot of fun to watch.
I guess. Let's see Penn State play somebody other than a junior varsity team, because their opening three games are just ridiculous. For them to be the number two team in the country, what is that based on? Just the opinion that they've got a really good team coming back, or that they're, you know, that they hired a $4 million defensive coordinator from their biggest rival. The whole rankings thing to me is ridiculous. When your murderer's row string of victories are the three teams that they've beaten, good grief. I didn't know Villanova even fielded a football team. I was waiting for Ed Pinckney to run out on the field and upset Georgetown. That's just so ridiculous that they played that schedule so far of Nevada, Florida International, and Villanova, and are ranked the number two teams. It just makes the rankings a joke. And maybe Penn State's going to turn out to be this awesome. We'll find out. But,
We'll find out this weekend.
I guess so. But then again, what do we really know about Oregon right now? Except they're a scoring machine. They haven't exactly played a fantastic schedule either. Case has nominated Stanford for the worst team in the Power Four. I think the Oklahoma State Cowboys are right in that discussion. Wow. Case, I got to ask you this. How in the hell does Mike Gundy keep his job?
He's gone boring. After this year for sure. I know I'm not really in the know and all this stuff, but I do know when Pry and Foster got fired, what, last week?
Yeah.
There was some surprise from the college football establishment that they did it before this. What is it? You can still redshirt after 5 weeks now. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some talk that a smart program wouldn't want to fire their coach until I think after this week. So maybe that's some of these guys like Gundy. Again, I'm speaking out of my butt here. I don't really know all the ins and outs, but I do know they were saying that it was kind of disadvantageous to not just wait a week to fire those guys. So maybe Oklahoma State's just being a little smarter. And I think his papers are coming soon, though.
If he's going to buy out at all, they're screwed. I mean, I don't know what his buyout is, but he's been there forever. And again, he's got pictures of somebody because he has been there. As long as he throws in a 9-win season every couple of seasons, he's good to go. But this year, they are horrible.
They have no money. I do know that. Me and Kip talked about this when he was here. Since T. Boone Pickens died, I mean, they have just had no money in the athletic program. So that probably is part of it. Not really wanting to scrounge up the money for the buyout.
I happen to know somebody that goes to school there and plays defensive back, and that is absolutely true because his NIL deal that he has is kind of horrible. He got a raise to go there, went there instead of Arkansas, he's leaving after this year. So there may be something to what you're saying because I know how many games they're into the season, and good Lord, they're a 20.5 point favorite or 20.5 point dog at home against a horrible Baylor team.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. You know, guys, I'm also interested in this game. As great a coach as Dan Lanning is, as impressive as Oregon's been last year, and Case probably has the numbers, Oregon going west to east did not travel very well. They almost lost. I mean, came ridiculously close last year to losing to horrid Wisconsin on the road. You know, so I'm a little concerned about that from an Oregon standpoint. Penn State may look really good in this game, and it really might not prove all that much.
I think it's going to be a defensive game, personally. Even looking at a lower total, is it a whiteout? I don't really remember.
Yeah, it's a whiteout.
I mean, under 52.5 because most of the whiteouts, you know, their defense plays really well. And Oregon really has not put up points on anybody that matters yet. And don't get me wrong, I think they're a very good offensive team. Their defense has played okay. So I could definitely see under 52.5. And it actually opened at 53.5 and it's dropped a point already.
Surprising good game this weekend, LSU Ole Miss, Case. A pair of 4-0 teams. The line's about 2.5, which I think a lot of people thought it was going to probably be. What you got?
I've got nothing on this game. It seemed like Kai and Kip reacted, so maybe they have more to put in. It's tough for me. I mean, I don't think we're going to know. Lane Kiffin always plays things close to the vest. Is he sticking with Chambliss or is he going back to Austin Simmons? To me, it'd be a no-brainer. I think that Trinidad Chambliss just adds a new dimension. He might be a little bit more combustible, I guess, that, you know, when he runs into a real defense, maybe he turns into a pumpkin, but to me, it kind of comes down to handicapping who's going to play quarterback. And if it's Chambliss, I think I would lean Ole Miss here. It seems like their defense is getting better. LSU, obviously not that impressive. This is just a really tough game for me to figure out. I'm much more excited for Oregon, Penn State. Kind of weird for me. It's kind of worked as a natural hedge because I have so many futures on Penn State to do everything and against Oregon on doing nothing. I was down on Oregon going in this year despite how much I like Dan Lanning. But I just think it's hard not to be impressed with what the Ducks have done so far. I know, this is going to be a fundamental disagreement between us every year. One of the most predictive things in college football over a long, long span is how you treat these games that don't matter and these teams that are overmatched and what you do against them. And Oregon's numbers, I mean, they are just, they haven't really played anyone, but Montana State's like one of the best teams in the FCS. They were up 28-0 in like 5 minutes. I mean, they're just absolutely smashing everyone. They lost a bunch of skill players. I think they only had 4 returning starters, but I don't know where they get these young kids, but they have these freshmen that just look like the DeCorian Moore kid, the receiver. You're going to be hearing a lot about him. He's absolutely unbelievable. I think their second running back's a freshman or a sophomore. I think the name starts with a D, Hill something. I've just been really impressed with Oregon. And a few years ago, I would have stuck to my priors for sure and been on Penn State here. But college football, things just turn over so fast now. The rosters are so different that I've started more aggressively moving based on what I've seen in the season. And based on what I've seen in the season, I would have heart. I would have a hard time getting Penn State to a 3-point favorite, more than a 3-point favorite here. So I fired on Oregon at open. I'm kind of hating it. I'm not hating it. I kind of have some second thoughts now, but again, it works. It works as a natural hedge for me because I'm so high on Penn State overall and low on Oregon. I also think there's the chance that Penn State has really just been going through the motions these first 3 weeks. I mean, it is entirely possible that they've just been drilling in practice looking towards this Oregon game since like July. But I mean, we were kind of in the same situation a few other times before. I mean, I not to keep bringing up Georgia, Tennessee, but we were in the same situation for Georgia, Tennessee. I heard a ton of people picking Georgia, saying that, you know, it's all much ado about nothing. If they hadn't looked so good so far, they have all this special stuff they're going to throw at them. And as we said, even if you're super impressed with their win, it's not like they came out and were gangbusters. So no. I have some questions about Penn State that I didn't think I'd have. And I think over three is a little much. I wouldn't take any less than that. But for better or for worse, I'm on Oregon, despite being Mr. Penn State in the offseason and skeptical of Oregon.
No, I was one of those guys, too. I thought Georgia would just they hadn't seen anything. The next thing you know, they're out there and they're losing 21-7. You're like, wow. I mean, Tennessee does look fantastic in that ball game.
How is Oregon's new quarterback going to play in that pressure cooker environment? I mean, he really hasn't been on a big stage yet.
And I was super down on him, too. So, I mean, we'll see if I should have. He's been awesome, though. We'll see if he's up for the big time. But, yeah, it is a huge question.
The only reason I shook my head about the Ole Miss LSU is because you said 2.5. The line's dropped to 1 already.
Wow. So
that's the only reason I shook my head, because the line was 1 this morning.
That's crazy.
That is kind of crazy.
Tony asked me yesterday what the line was going to be in that game, and I said that game should be a pick'em, and I guess it's heading that way.
Yeah.
There you have it. Every game has been talked about, including several of the SEC games. But the one, of course, everyone around here wants to talk about is Alabama and Georgia. And we just talked about that just a few minutes ago. Another game really interesting, Auburn at A&M. Auburn catching the same number of points they had at Oklahoma at 6. What's your thoughts on it, Guy?
I don't think Texas A&M is as good as Oklahoma. I just don't. If I can get 7, I probably take Auburn plus the 7. And let's be honest. If Auburn doesn't get the ball at the 1 and just act stupid, you know, Oklahoma doesn't get that cover as well. I think Oklahoma's defense is better than Texas A&M's defense. I think Oklahoma's offense is better than Texas A&M's offense. I think Auburn is a better team in their second road trip versus their first road trip. I think they'll be better. If I can get over a touchdown with Auburn, I'm going to get it. I don't know that they'll win the game. I don't think they will. But I would have to get it. If I can get at least a touchdown, I'd have to take it.
Any other thoughts on that, guys? You like it too, Kyle?
I mean, I'll gladly tell you when I get bad numbers. Luckily, these games have just come up where I've really the market seems to be moving with me. I bet Auburn plus 7.5 at open. Not something I love. I mean, it's a really tough spot going back-to-back road games. But, I mean, let's be honest. They kind of got screwed in that Oklahoma game. I'm not saying they should have won, but there's no way they shouldn't have covered. And I kind of looked at it similarly at a Kai. I mean, I've been impressed with Texas A&M, but I definitely have Oklahoma rated higher. And then to go across, I mean, that game closed 6.5 across the board. To go a point higher over 7, I thought that was a little too aggressive. So I played Auburn plus 7.5, and that would still be my lean even at 6.5. I'm calling it up right now. I think I made Auburn about like a 5.5-point underdog. So we'll see. The one thing that scares me is getting up, you know, 2 weeks in a row for a spot like this when A&M's coming off of a bye. But I think Auburn's awfully good. It's just too bad they couldn't find someone that could pass. I feel like this team's like SEC championship caliber if they just had. And I know Arnold's done some good things and gets out in the open field, and he's been electric. But, man, if they just had a little bit upgrade at quarterback, I think they'd be really, really scary.
Ohio State giving up 8.5 at Washington. Kai, you're shaking your head again. You shake your head almost every single time I throw a line out. I can't tell if I'm looking at the lines right now, so I know what I'm looking at. So I know that's the 8.5, right? What are you shaking your head at?
I jumped on it early. When it was 8, I bought it down to 7. I know Case and I've already talked about it. I think he disagrees on that one. I just think Ohio State is much, much, much stronger than Washington. I know it's road and all that, but I think Ohio State goes in there and lays the wood to them in 8. I could be wrong, but I can't see where I am.
I think I actually ended up picking Ohio State -8 in my column. I will say I really badly wanted to be on Washington here. This week's so big that last week, I think you guys are the ones that alerted it to me, actually. There were like 4 or 5 games already posted. I looked and We were talking about Georgia, Alabama, and Georgia was a 4.5 point favorite, at least at a book out here. I saw at the time Washington was 13.5, and I was like, oh, I should bet that because I'm really high on Washington. I love Damon Williams, their sophomore quarterback. He's probably the best quarterbacks no one's talked about. I think Washington might have either the second or third longest home winning streak behind Georgia. I think they've won 22 straight home games.
No.
So when it was 13.5, I was like, I'm going to bet Washington. Of course I didn't. I was like, Ohio State doesn't play this week. Washington has Washington State. It's going to be easier to get down a decent sized bet when it reopens. So I'll just wait and bet it later. Then it reopened 5 points fewer. And I don't know. I can't quite get there. Although I am not totally sold on Ohio State. I have some questions. I don't love Julian Sayin. I do love their skill players. I just don't know if he can get them the ball enough. I feel like it's a tough spot, but man, that's an aggressive move. I know there's not a ton of liquidity in these look ahead markets a week before, but I'm kicking myself. I didn't get down at least a little bit on Washington plus 13.5 at 8. It's gotta be a pass for me. And if I had to make a bet, such a big move, I'd probably be on Ohio State.
Kip, again, one of those tricky road games. You talk about where you play, right?
Yeah, that's the whole Big Ten structure now. Although last year, I think the numbers bear out, the teams going east to west fared better than the teams going west to east. And who knows in year two what that, but it's something to keep an eye on because, the travel thing, it looks like I was sounding the alarm about the Ireland game to start the year. Kansas State looks like they're falling into the Florida State trap of not being able to recover from that ridiculous 1 week jaunt over across the pond. This is, of course, not that extreme going from just two time zones, but it's still something to keep an eye on. And I think the line on this game is going to continue to react to Ohio State because if people are like me, I don't think I've seen one play of Washington football this year. I don't even really know. Usually I'm very adept at who teams have played. I really don't even know the Washington schedule so far. But I do know that Fish, the coach that came to replace DeBoer from Arizona, was doing miraculous things. And I think I said a couple weeks ago here, I gauge how a coach is in terms of his performance on how his team plays after they depart. And Arizona looks like in the post-Fish administration is not only not making progress, they're stepping back to where they were before he kind of resurrected them. So that might be an indication that this guy really knows his stuff. And I know Case is high on him. Washington may be an up-and-coming power, and this might be a really interesting game.
Case, I don't know if there's any bet you can make on this. I always feel like there's some type of stuff out there, and I know you have, obviously, you can't bet on all the things like, coin tosses and crap like that that the public always talks about. But is there anything going on with Clemson as far as betting against them, betting on Dabo not having a job at the end of the season? Will he become the Alabama's next head coach? I threw that question out to Kip Kiefer because 6-7 years ago, Alabama fans probably said, yeah, we'll take Dabo right now. I'm not so sure. And the guy's won 2 national titles. According to his list of shit that he just told us, they've won the Division 8 of the last 10 years. They've gone to the playoffs 7 to 10 years. Da, 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 da. And I mean, they're just valuing over there. And I got a son that goes to school there, and he said it's demoralizing. He said people don't want to go to school over there. It's just unbelievable how disappointed they are. But listen, when you win national titles, you're not expected to go 1-3. Something's got to pay. And I don't know what Clemson does at this point. What are you hearing?
Yeah, you can't bet anything like that in Vegas, but if you do want to search the offshores, things like BetOnline, I think does a lot of these. I just actually searched Dabo in my email because I get 8 million of these press releases and some things did pop up. So Sports Betting AG, I would say be careful with these. Like, I don't like when people cite these on shows like, oh, look, Billy Napier is the favorite to be the next coach fired at +150. Gundy's 3-1. The thing is, you can only get like $200 down on these bets, so I don't really consider it like a true market. It's mostly for marketing purposes, and shout out to them. It does a great job of marketing. The only Dabo press release I've gotten with it, there is a market on Clemson's next head coach that Sports Betting has posted. It has Dabo 9-1 to be the next coach fired. Next head coach, Brent Venables, the favorite at 2-1. This is ridiculous. Jimbo Fisher at 4-1. Deion Sanders at 5-1. John Stonewall at 7.
John Gruden. Is John Gruden in there too?
I would think he's got to be, but I don't see him near the top. Oh, yeah. 12-1. He's about the 7th choice. So, yeah, I mean, I can't believe I was the biggest Clemson detractor, I felt like, of anyone, and I still can't believe how far it's fallen. I was on them last week against Syracuse, and I was dead wrong because they no-showed. another game. It's
and now they've hit their under 9.5. They're almost 257 over.
I know. I had that.
One book here, it got as high as 10.5, and it wasn't even bad juice. I think it was like under 10.5 minus 130. It was, and I just couldn't quite bring myself to bet.
I don't think I've ever lost an over bet 4 weeks into a season in anything. By the way, my Reds saved my ass too. By the way, they were squandering, and of course they've rolled off 5 games in a row, so they get over the over 7.5. So those two bets kind of wipe each other out. But we'll talk some bases coming up here in just a few minutes. And yes, Ryder Cup, we're going to get to that here in just a few minutes. A lot of NFL action going on this weekend as well. We have another show coming up Friday morning at 10 o'clock. We'll really get steeped up on some more college football, our picks, and certainly on the NFL. Coming up on Friday's show, that should be really, really interesting. I don't, and Kip, and I know where you're going, and you're the old man on the front porch of the thing. You're telling the kids to get off the lawn, moment. I get that. I understand. We've been talking.
I'm begging them to cut the lawn because nobody else wants to do it. Yeah, go ahead.
We've been talking. You know why we have polls for 35 years in sports radio it was a go to subject, and again, people. We need polls. We have to have polls. I understand that. I will say this. There's something I saw something like over the last 15 years. The average number of teams that were preseason top 25 that didn't make it at the last poll is like 3.7 teams, which is pretty damn good. Last year, I think there were only two. Florida State, Arizona State were the two teams, or Arizona State was the one team, and Indiana were two teams that got in that weren't supposed to, and Florida State fell out. And certainly Clemson is at FSU last year where they just totally missed.
And Michigan was a top 10 team last year.
Michigan was the other one. Michigan and Florida State, you're correct. Two top 10 teams that just fell out. So for the most part, they come pretty damn close. I'm not saying Oregon is going to be a top three team by the end of the season, but we do our homework, and that's what we're doing, homework. And you base on what you look at. You look at what you got going. You look at what's coming back. You look at who they beat last year. You look at your schedule this year and who you're going to be on the road, and you make your best shot at it.
And you look at name brands. That's
– look at name brands. Absolutely.
I mean, it's not that the thing is, I don't give a lot of credit for a high percentage of the top 25 teams being there at the end, because there are so many that are the easiest thing to eliminate right off the bat, because there are teams aren't going to be any good. I just think the pool is pretty small, and I don't know what everybody else thinks.
But it is what it is, and we're glad we have polls, because it's the first thing I look at when the first poll comes out. Everyone wants to look at the first poll.
Yeah, I guess. But at this point, we're actually playing games. I don't know how you make the number two team in the country team that's played a joke of a schedule.
I'll tell you right now, if Penn State ends up losing, 4 games, they won't be number three. It'll fall out. They'll fall out, and the voters will subjectively make sure they don't stay in the top three, so they'll lose their positioning, and that's the way it usually works.
But from a schedule standpoint, they can't possibly lose 4 games unless they lose the whole team gets.
I just don't want to have this argument every year 4 weeks into the system that they haven't played anybody, because it felt like we did this last year. It felt like last year no one played anybody. I don't know if anyone ever had a strength of schedule last year, because it was like, well, they haven't played anybody yet. I'm like, guys, we're 6-7 weeks into the season. I mean, everyone can't suck. I mean, everyone does.
I was actually delighted to see some teams line up that had a pulse play each other last week, because we saw very little of that.
But you even just said Penn State and Oregon. You don't know what Oregon is. So, I mean, that's a hell of a matchup. But you're like, but I don't know what Oregon is. So, I mean, you can't even say that that's a good matchup, right?
It's a good matchup because, these are two talented teams. So, that was the sense I had watching the Auburn-Oklahoma game last week. Okay, now we're going to find out what these teams really are. And I think we got some clues. It's not definitive, because that game could have gone either way. But yeah, I just want to start seeing the real games. I've been doing this for 25 years. I absolutely despise these cupcake games that are just designed for revenue, and everybody says, well, those teams need that revenue to sustain their programs. Well, that's fine, but it really makes the product suck when you have all these ridiculous games at Long Island at Florida. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, it helps the economy of Knoxville when UAB fans go up there and drop $120 a piece.
Yeah. Or like the old joke.
Like I said, you're the old man. This is the old man argument. I get it. I totally get it. I side with you on everything, but it is what it is, and that's what we're going to get. And I got news for you. If you can play an Indiana schedule from last year and make the playoffs, you're going to see more of this fucking shit. Go down to and more teams play Saginaw State. I got news for you.
And as tough as I am on Cignetti and Indiana, I mean, they're doing the smart thing. Everybody else is the stupid ones, like Clemson playing LSU in the first game and Miami playing and Notre Dame playing. I mean,
and I get that. And I get that from the standpoint, listen, if you're playing 9 conference games and you're playing in a conference like the SEC, which everyone always says, oh my gosh, if you're playing an SEC schedule, you got to play some FCS schools. I get that. I understand that. You know, it just so happens that some years, you know, some teams aren't that good. This year, actually in the Big Ten, it used to be Michigan, Ohio State, and everyone else. Now this year, we've actually got some teams. We got some USCs. We got some Oregons. We got some Penn States. We got some other teams that actually look like they're pretty decent. I don't know.
And you got an 11 o'clock game coming up this Saturday. Well, at Illinois, USC at Illinois, laying a touchdown. It's actually 6.5 now. And that's an 11 o'clock game. It's a 9 o'clock game for USC. I actually know it's East Coast. That's an 8 o'clock game
for
USC. So that that line's low, maybe it's not, especially with USC, what they've done, and Illinois coming off of, you know, getting beat by 740 points on the road. Now they're back at home. So that looks interesting. I got a question for you. I want to know if anybody can get this. And if you've got it written down, don't answer, Tony. So it's okay. Tony Curry, useless fact for college football. Who is leading the nation in passing yards?
Oh, boy.
How about this? How about give me one of the top five? Give me one of the top five. Anybody leading the nation, the top five. Give me one, Case. Throw one out.
Damon Williams. I don't know. I know he's put up big numbers.
Nope.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, gosh. I don't even have a guess. Who's
Anthony Calandria? No, they had a bye.
No, but quit guessing. You lost your guess.
Oh.
Tony?
I'm not looking. I think the Duke quarterback, only because I watched that game this past weekend and I had NC State. I thought the wrong team was favored there, but I think the Mensa kids in there.
Number
somewhere.
1,305 yards.
Good really? Job. Wow!
I know this too. Can I throw out the one I know? Jalen Kidd. UAB's their quarterback's throwing the ball all over the place, but they're getting killed.
Number 5 at 1,256 yards.
Yeah, that's
all right. Give me who has the number one offense in the country? The number one offense, not scoring, just yards per game.
I know who leads most offensive metrics. Can I answer, or am I still shunned?
You get a chance to go 1 for 3 here.
USC.
No, Florida State at 628.7
total yards.
USC third at 583.
Well, total yards means nothing to me. Anything efficiency or play adjusted is going to be USC.
And Florida State's last few games.
Leads us with 1,320 yards from Baylor. Syracuse quarterback second. Duke third. Eastern Carolina's fourth. But to tell you how much passing yards don't matter, again, Kitna is – fifth with 1,256.
Yeah, that makes
Florida State has the number one offense. Indiana second, USC third, Texas Tech fourth, Virginia 5. The reason I bring it up, 1 and 5 there, play Friday night, Florida State at Virginia.
Yeah. Florida State has suppressed East Texas A&M, which only has 12,000 students. I have no idea. They're in Commerce, Texas. And of course they beat mighty Kent State last week. So,
but we made money. We made money on it though, Chip. See, there's a reason why we have these games. That was a triple play. We made money on that game. So let's not give old Nick Saban's old team Kent State some credit here.
Okay.
For being something for us. We needed them is what we needed.
Okay. Well, I'm proud of their effort then.
Hey, listen, I want to jump in because I know Kai brought this up before the show and he's like, we got to talk Ryder Cup, and I'm all about it too. Let's jump around a little bit. Let's get into some Ryder Cup action. We'll hit some NFL on the other side and then baseball towards the end. We want to tell people because we know people can't listen to the entire show. We got to tell you where we're going. So we'll make sure that when you're clicking around, you're getting our picks and everything else. But let's go with some Ryder Cup. Case, give me the board on Ryder Cup. I know a lot of people, we got more golfers down here. People down here absolutely love that stuff. And a lot of money to be made for sure. And you have been just absolutely on fire the last 2 or 3 years I've known you when it comes to golf.
Yeah, I'd say golf had kind of been my bread and butter betting wise. I will say full disclosure, I haven't had a really good, I think dating back to the summer, I've definitely cooled off. Golf has not gone well. Luckily, when I was talking about it a lot on you guys' other show, the starting lineup, I was red hot to start the year. I was just crushing everything. Yeah, the Ryder Cup too, it's going to be interesting. I always wish it wasn't during football season, but yeah, this weekend at Bethpage Black in New York, USA versus Europe. You're seeing the U.S. take some money here early in the week, which doesn't surprise me because all these national sports books, I think everyone just wants to bet on the Americans to win. It's not like the big sports books here aren't international right now. So I do think the U.S. is the likelier winners. I mean, we've seen the home team win, I think, every year dating back to 2012 at Medina, where Europe won that one. I just think, and Europe's been more successful overall. I still think the U.S. team edges them slightly in just about every area you can make it, but emphasis on the word slightly, because in past years, the U.S. team was clearly better on paper in every area, and Europe still gives them fits. I think the depth advantage that the U.S. has had for a long time is really kind of gone now. Europe kind of has the better young players with Ludwig Ober, who's just, probably has the most beautiful golf swing you'll ever see. I think he's only 25 years old. Even Rasmus Højgaard at the bottom, 24-year-old, can just hit it a mile, which I think is really important at Bethpage Black. I do want the bombers, the guys who hit it the furthest. Obviously, America's kind of number two behind Scottie Scheffler. Bryson DeChambeau is the longest hitter in the world, so that should help. And he's a real fiery guy who's going to feed off the crowd. I've seen some of the guys this week say that they're going to kind of follow Bryson's lead. I still think at the price right now, there's no way. I don't think you can lay a price with the U.S., especially in the most popular market is to lift the trophy. I think the U.S. is opened up to like a minus 160, minus 170 favorite. Full disclosure, I bet Europe a few months ago, before the teams were even announced, I bet Europe at plus 130. At the time, I thought Keegan Bradley was going to put himself on the team, which I seem different than everyone else in the golf world that thinks that was a good idea and Keegan should have put himself on the team. I thought he shouldn't have. So I think USA gets a small boost by bringing in a guy like Cameron Young, putting him over Keegan. So I wouldn't even necessarily bet them at plus 130 anymore, but I would be careful with that to lift the trophy market because, like I said, I feel like this is really close and there's a real chance that this could come down to a 14-14 tie. And what happens if it's a tie? The team that has the trophy retains it. So if you're going to bet US, maybe just go to the three-way market and hope it's not for a tie, because if it's a tie, it goes to Europe. But yeah, this is like the closest it's ever looked on paper, since at least I've been doing it seriously. And I feel like that should scare American fans because it's looked lopsided a lot in past years and the Americans don't get it done.
And the tie is plus 1,200. So, I mean, you go put in, $25 to win plus 1,200, not bad.
That's pretty good. It could be 14-14.
I'm sitting here looking at some of the numbers right now too. What am I saying? The U.S. minus 150. What are some of the lines for teams right now?
You have it about right. If you have it, minus 150 is actually a little bit cheap compared to the rest of the market. So I just said not to bet U.S., but if you're just so patriotic and can't help it.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to bet. I'm not going to bet on anyone else. So
I will say, this is big of an event as it is. It is a little bit lesser for me betting wise. Like I think probably the Sanderson Farms is usually next week in Jackson, Mississippi. I'll have way more money on that event. It's just easier.
Wow.
All my infrastructure is on stroke play and these tournaments. We don't get the matchups till right before. It's kind of a scramble of who posts them. I will say it's really popular markets are top American scorer, top European scorer, and top overall scorer. I think I made this mistake when I first seriously bet golf, and I'm going to jinx it now, but I've won money every Ryder Cup I've bet on, so I'm hoping to keep the streak this year. But I did make a mistake that first year when you see these long prices on guys and you're like, oh, I'll use Matt Fitzpatrick as an example, who I think's game is really trending up now. I'm really high on. He's like 12-1 to be the top European scorer, which in a vacuum, I would be like, wow, 12-1 on Fitzpatrick. He's playing just as well as the guys at the top of the board right now. Now, but the problem is that the coaches are going to give guys like Rory and Rahm a lot more opportunities.
So to me,
this is kind of a chance to be chalky. I took the two favorites in the top point scorer market to be totally transparent. I took Scottie Scheffler at 6-1. That's taken a lot of steam now. I think I saw him as low as 350 today. I took Scheffler at 6-1 and Rory at, I think, 10 plus 1050 to be the top overall point scorers. I just think both those guys are going to have way more opportunities. And I think Scheffler is the best player in the world, and there's a huge gap, a bigger gap than there's been in years in golf towards number two. But number two is still pretty clearly Rory to me. Europe probably has 3-4 too in Fleetwood and Rahm. DeChambeau earlier in the year was just on great form and was probably as high as number two, but he's really slipped off. We'll see if he can gain it back here. I kind of worry about the American teams. Yeah, a lot of their form. I mean, Colin Morikawa is playing terrible to the point that some people thought he shouldn't be on the team. Cameron Young's trending up, but again, how many opportunities is he going to get? I don't know. I'm very fascinated by how this will go. I think it looks close on paper to me.
And it needs to be said, Tony. Oh, go ahead, Kai.
No, go ahead.
No, all I was going to say is Bethpage Black may be one of the toughest courses in the United States has to offer. It is a bitch. I don't know if you all remember the last U.S. Open played there, but it was one of those that they set it up so punitively that I don't think the winning score was, if it was under par, it was barely under par. It is long. It is narrow. If you hit it crooked, you're going to be buried in the rough. There's punitive bunkers. This is a test, really a difficult golf course. So, from a handicapping standpoint, and I'm not, I don't delve into golf numbers, but there's certain courses that have that reputation, and the players that can just kind of manage and get around, if anybody's even just a little bit a kind of a swashbuckler and doesn't hit it straight all the time, this golf course will absolutely bury you.
Yeah, and looking at it with America having four Ryder Cup rookies, and Europe only has one, that's a little interesting. I really think that a key member of this is Justin Rose for Europe. Just the way that he plays, the leadership that he could have. But a lot of it comes down to, and I really like Patrick Cantlay. If I'm going to get some better odds as far as being the top USA score, and it's not as good of odds, but I like Fleetwood and I like Ludvig, especially with his putter. I like both of those two to possibly get the opportunity to be the top European score.
K4wins.com, K4wins.com. We post anything on that?
We have not as of yet.
Are we going to?
After, and then we will.
Okay, yeah. So we'll have some plays up on our website.
Starts on Friday.
All right, yeah. So make sure you get after it and check us out early. And again, we'll actually be doing a show live on Tony Curry Radio on our YouTube channel at the Mention Coastal Sports Digital Network. And, of course, right here on TKR, so, 10 o'clock.
Let me ask an ignorant guy question because I've never bet golf. I've watched it all my life and played it all my life. But when the pairings come out, I guess mostly overnight for the morning matches, and then you have them before does a number come out right away on those individual pairings?
At the bigger sports books, yes. The guys that are really on top of it and are taking big bets and, take this seriously and not, don't even get me started on the state of the industry. It's not a PR firm that just puts out commercials. The big sports books will have numbers right away, but it's hard to, for me, especially in match play, is just so much different than stroke play. I like to bet early as possible on most things. I want to fire on openers, but in golf, I want to see where the market moves, and I want to see where these big sports books move. So you kind of got to wait till the next morning. You got to wait till the last minute to see where other sports books are opening it. I like to see where the money's coming in first, especially before getting involved. So there will be numbers right away, but it's going to be at sports books that typically know what they're doing. And I don't know. It's just hard for me to get an idea of what the right price should be with the way it comes out. It just seems different in normal golf tournaments.
Yeah, it just seems like a fascinating event from a betting standpoint in terms of kind of the cat and mouse game of lines, and because that's got to be a tough thing even for Vegas to set on something that's moving at that kind of speed that really doesn't have a preconceived schedule. So I always find it fascinating from a kind of thinking about it from a betting standpoint.
It's a lot different.
Well, also, you got to look at it how you gamble that and know if it's the foursome or the four ball, which ones they're doing in these matchups. They'll be everywhere by Thursday night at the latest, but to really know, people have to understand, what a four ball and what a foursome is, that in the foursome, they're playing every other stroke. In the four ball, there, everybody's playing their own ball and its best score. So that really matters when you look at the matchups and you look at the golfers that are out there and look how hard that course is going to be. And, is it going to be the long hitters? Is it going to be the accurate hitters? What's it going to be on that course?
Yeah. In case, can you fatten up on Sunday on the singles matches?
Yeah, you can. But again, it's a quick turnaround because I don't think those come out till the last minute. And then some sports books are slow to get them. In my case, I'm dealing with NFL. I'm trying to get last minute NFL stuff.
Yeah, it sucks. It's current football. So why can't we have the Ryder Cup in the spring where there's nothing going on?
I'm usually not super involved, but I will definitely be looking and I'll be interested to see where we are. I will say one area where the U.S., even though I'm not as high on their bottom, I think their depth is a little compromised this year. And like I said, I don't feel like a lot of those guys get it further. I think one area where maybe it's not talked about enough where Europe has kind of owned the U.S. is they just have way better putters usually. And that's actually not the case this year with guys like Ben Griffin making his first team, J.J. Spahn, Sam Burns. I actually have the U.S. with a small edge in putting, and I think that's the first time in a long time. So if you're looking to make cases for the U.S., that depth, they have some guys that can make a putt in clutch situations, in my opinion.
At no point can we say, yeah, but he hasn't played anybody.
Yeah.
Well, you kind of can now. A lot of these guys don't play against each other every week.
What the hell, Justin Rose hasn't played anybody? What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, well, but the comparison to that, Tony, would be these guys dropping down and playing against a bunch of hackers in the local member guests. That's the best comparison I can think of.
I love your ass. You know I'm fucking with you. I'll screw with you. Hey! My Reds are in, and I believe Kai Gregory says, I don't see it happening. A week ago, I got news for you. My Reds are sitting there nip and tuck. Right now, it's them and the Mets, both at 80-76 with six games to go. And then you look in the American League. We got the Bo Sox, the Guardians, and, of course, the Astros, the Texas Rangers. They're done. Arizona Diamondbacks have a shot their game out. But, again, only 5 or 6. I can't believe the Mets have just fallen apart. I can't, but to be honest with you, I cannot believe how Cincinnati is winning baseball games. I mean, they're throwing one hitters. Green had a one hitter the other night. Abbott went off and won a game 2-0. Their pitching is fantastic. And I think for the most part, Cincinnati's pitching's finally come together at the right time. Now we'll see if they can hold it together the last six games. I like their Pittsburgh and Milwaukee matchups. But Kai, what you seeing in Major League Baseball? I actually got something to look forward to in the next couple of days.
I actually think Cincinnati might have the easiest road to make it and to win and to get in because they have Pitt. We don't even have to say anything about that. They're at Milwaukee their last three games. Who knows what Milwaukee's really going to be trying to do. The Mets are at the Cubs and at Miami. I don't really love the matchups. I want to see the pitching matchups. And Arizona, you know, God love them. They're playing the Dodgers, and then they're at San Diego. And it's just going to depend, you know, what those two teams are doing. I'm really excited that starting even today, you've got a playoff atmosphere matchup with Detroit at Cleveland.
Yeah. What about the Tigers collapse? Good grief.
Boy, they run seven games off. And isn't it crazy to see a team get that hot at this time of the year and just fall on their face? I mean,
it's Braves like, go in there with nothing to play for and just punk their ass last weekend.
You can still get Cleveland right now, plus 40 today.
That's amazing.
Scooble's going for Detroit, but he's had some good outings, but he has struggled over the last six starts.
Been a little shaky.
And Cleveland starter,
I think it's Gavin Williams.
If I can get Cleveland, you know, plus 35 or 40 right there, I really like that. But it should be a sold-out stadium. And it should be, you know, a playoff atmosphere there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the American League, you know, unfortunately, I think Boston is probably screwed. They should be in, and I know they're like 80%, but they're at Toronto, and then they play Detroit at home for three games. The Yankees have the White Sox in Baltimore. Cleveland has Detroit and Texas, and then Detroit has Cleveland and Boston. Houston, we'll see. Oakland and the Angels. Houston may have, although at Oakland it's not going to be easy. Those last three games against the Angels could propel them into the playoffs. And Boston, if they don't go at least 3-3 their next six games, they may be out.
Yeah, I'm just excited, I mean, because from a hometown standpoint, my Bengals look like, oh, my God, my Bengals look so bad this past weekend, by the way. And, of course, I played them. We were doing the show, and I'm like, yeah, 2.5, you know. What is Minnesota got? They don't have a quarterback, blah, blah, blah. And they just absolutely got bludgeoned. They looked horrible. Let's talk some quick NFL here before the top of the show. We do have some interesting games this weekend, of course, including it seems like every time Baltimore is playing a football game, it's a fantastic game. And it will
what
be
about again. Detroit last night just running the ball down their throat?
Yeah, that was something else. And I think a lot of people were really surprised by that because that was a Detroit team that, quite frankly, we knew was there. And I know you've been high on them, Case, all season long, but to get that done on the road was huge.
Yeah, I was not high on them last night. I had a really good NFL Sunday, and Monday was a disaster, especially with the way the game went. I lost three props on the final drive. That was brutal. I didn't see it coming. I know the Ravens had Matt Ebuke and Kyle Van Noy out, but the Lions had guys hurt too, so I didn't think it'd be that big of a deal. But man, my respect for Matt Ebuke just went through the roof after seeing that defense without him. I mean, he's just the fulcrum of everything they do, and like you guys said, the Lions just won at the line of scrimmage. I was pretty surprised by that result last night. And I took that one on the chin. It hurt quite a bit. Yeah, looking forward to this week coming up, week four. I think we got some good games again. I mean, I pick them on Thursday night, which Seattle and Arizona. I haven't really waited. I guess I did bet the under 45. Oh, thank God. Finally, the under's taken some money. I bet some under 45 pretty big, and it actually moved the other way for a second. I didn't really get it. I know that's another one where there's a lot of defensive injuries. Arizona's secondary is depleted. Seattle has some guys out too, so maybe I'm setting myself up for failure. But 43.5 now, I still kind of feel like that's maybe an under game. We get the return of the early morning European game, Minnesota and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's got to be the least impressive 2-1 team ever. They had no business beating the stupid Jets. They get crushed by Seattle, and then last week they Ramondre Stevenson fumbles twice within the 5-yard line. They recover the ball there, +5 in turnovers, and win by the skin of their teeth. I don't know how Pittsburgh does this year after year after year. They look crappy, and they somehow find a way to win these games.
Mike Tomlin. You're right. You're right, coaching, man. It's all you can point at. Absolutely. What about Baltimore at KC?
I'd monitor those injuries. I mean, I don't think I have anything on this game. I don't think I might have bet the total actually a little bit. I might have taken some. I don't know how it's moved. Let me look here really quick. I did bet some over 48.5, which I like even better after last night. I had the spread right about where it should be. Although, I mean, it seems like Kansas City kind of got it together in the second half against the Giants. There's some talk that Xavier Worthy will be back this week. I mean, I'd really monitor if there's any chance Matt Ebuke can play, because I think after last night, I'd say he's like a top five most important Raven. So I have nothing there other than the over. The side looks about right to me.
And what about the emergence of Tyquan Thornton, who's just, I mean, you talk about a guy comes out of nowhere. He won the game for Kansas City the other night.
Yeah, he's known as one of Belichick's big busts, second round pick. And then, he seems like he got some chemistry downfield with Patrick Mahomes, and that's what they.
I'd never heard of him before, and boom, they're now he's dominating the game in the second half.
Yeah. By the way, that Seattle Arizona matchup you mentioned on Thursday, and a pair of Monday nighters, including my Cincinnati Bengals playing at Denver. It's like I don't even know if I want to watch that game. They're catching 7.5. I really don't. I am so down on my Bengals. I know they're 2-1. But that was just, tell me, it was just a nightmare that I saw this past week, that Cincinnati is really not that bad. I mean, defensively speaking, we've been talking them as a 48-point defensive team all year long. They're going to give that kind of points up. But good God almighty, if they can't score some points, they're in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't even the defense. It was Isaiah Rodgers.
Oh, my God. What the hell? Dude.
Turnovers.
Historical great game.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way that they're that bad. I'm not rushing. I don't have any. I didn't bet the side in that game. I would not be rushing for them to go take on this Denver defense. But man, Denver's offense, it looks like Bo Nix has regressed. They haven't been great. That being said, they had that game wrapped up and let Justin Herbert complete the 4th and 10 and the crazy pass to win the game. Yeah, this isn't a spot at elevation I'd be looking to back the Bengals, but I don't want to lay that big of a number with the Broncos either. I think the Bengals will bounce back at some point. They can't be that bad. I don't know if it's this week.
And by the way, we love the red zone. Everyone talks about the red zone. I can't tell you, you know, when Hanson comes on, you know, when does he say, when winners turn to losers or losers turn witching to winners, hour. Whatever it is, the witching hour?
Yeah.
It is so flipping true. It's amazing how good you can be feeling, you know, like at around, I don't know, 242, 243, 244, and then feel like total shit, like 5 minutes till three. I mean, it happens every weekend. I'm feeling, and there were a couple of backdoor jobbers, even the Kansas City game, there's a couple of backdoor jobbers, like picked up fumbles and running in for touchdowns with no times left on the clock.
Block, I'm
like,
kicks.
You gotta be, yeah. Oh, block kicks. You gotta be. And I mean, two of them, like, that. Oh my God. I'm like, dude, I mean, it gives me a heart attack. It really is. I mean, every single week I'm like, I want to watch But it just pours your heart out, and it seems like more times than not you're on the wrong end of that. It's just an amazing game to watch. It really is.
Yeah, that was an especially wild week last week. I mean, we had the Eagles backdoor cover with Jordan Davis running in the touchdown, right before that, I thought the craziest play ever was the Buccaneers Jets. I mean, I think the Buccaneers were up 27-6 or 23-6, whatever.
Yeah.
13 minutes to play,
and
they lose.
The Jets come back, and I mean, like, and if you feel like the Jets, yeah, I mean, just from a winning standpoint, you're feeling pretty good. Then you're losing cash on top of it. Shit. I mean, it's like, oh my God. Oh, well, it couldn't have better.
I've got a lot of respect for you guys that actually put money in. You know, I follow this. I always have an opinion, but that's why I don't actually. And it's not because I'm tight or anything, but it's just too nerve wracking and too just emotionally distressing. I just can't imagine having a lot of action on these games and watching the twists and turns. Now, of course, somebody on the other side is going, you know, I knew it all along. This was a lock, but it's just an amazing phenomenon to watch the NFL, and that's why, you know, at 81 of the top 100 programs last year were NFL games on the TV ratings. It's just a product like no other.
I can't tell you how many times I've gone into a Sunday. You know, it's like putting a front nine together with a back nine. You play a lights out front nine, your back nine just goes to hell. And if I have a great Saturday, I usually have a crappy Sunday. If I have a great Sunday, I usually have a crappy. Just trying to put two on, and I have bad both Saturdays and Sundays more so than I have great ones. But I can't tell you how many times I feel like I'm going to dig myself out of this huge hole at 2:42 on Sunday afternoon, and all of a sudden I'm calling my banker at 3:15 going, okay, now do I need to double up or just call it a night, because the games have switched on a dime like that. So
hey, real quick, Tony, and that is why, you know, for our subscribers, Sunday, we even said after the 19-3 Saturday, everybody wanted action, so we put some plays out Sunday, obviously, but we also said go very lightly. You are up, collect from your man. Don't try to push it hard, which everybody does. I do the same thing. I'm very guilty of it. Get way down, try to pump, come back.
Give me a play, boys. I want to double down on something.
That's right. And so, but with that saying, Kip, make sure you got those free spins and free rolls coming out tonight. If I'm coming all the way out to the Birmingham Racecourse,
we got it.
Free plays, baby.
Yeah, we got it. I watched my dad my entire life as a kid, and it tainted me forever. Monday night football, he go, okay, double up or catch up. We got 5,000 on Green Bay. And a 12-year-old shouldn't have to shoulder that kind of pressure of wondering if we're going to eat this week because Green Bay's got to cover a 3.5-point spread.
All right, guys, we're back at it Friday morning right around 10 o'clock Central. As always, great job, and thank you so much for being part of the Digital Sports Network here with Coastal, and of course, 1029thegame.com. Tony Curry Radio, we're doing really well there as well, and can't wait to get some more games and continue our 80% clip going into this weekend. It's going to be a fun week. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you, man.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.